Good afternoon and welcome to Jays Talk Plus. We're kind of back unofficially. I'm Blake Murphy. I'll be with you most of the Toronto Blue Jays season doing Jays Talk Plus every day on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 1 or Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus, all that stuff. That officially starts April 18th. We'll start it off 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. on all those channels. Eventually, we'll move back to 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. But it's opening week, and I wasn't going to sit that out and just talk about Kobe Simmons and Jamias Ramsey as the Raptors play out the string here on a 10-game losing streak. Wanted to get a couple pod episodes only in. We'll also wrap the shows off the air on Thursday, so 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. this Thursday. We'll have a live Jays Talk Plus. That is, of course, opening day for the Toronto Blue Jays. So we'll do a little kind of set the season up today. Today's going to be very roster focus, some of the decisions the Toronto Blue Jays have already made, some of the decisions they still have to make, or if they've made them, they haven't told us about them yet. Joining me to go through the roster, go through some of what these first couple weeks of the season could look like, is Sportsnet's own Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, how are you, buddy?
Doing great. It's good to be back in here talking some baseball with you. I feel like it's been a while since we officially, formally were talking Jays in this setting, but it's great to be back on the road toward another season here.
The last two times we did shows together were, hey, they didn't get Ohtani. What is the offseason going to look like from here? And prior to that, before anyone even thought Ohtani was a possibility, a end of season, what could the offseason look like? Now, we had some ideas. None of them were all that sexy. It turns out the Jays did even less than our unsexy version of the offseason. They, of course, massaged a little bit. They had a nice nice for the fans Joey Votto edition late in spring, but for the most part this team feels like they're in a similar spot to this time last year, maybe even on paper a little lesser depending on how optimistic you are about certain players bouncing back or moving forward. Before we get into the specific roster, Ben, March 25th, 2024 versus the way things looked on March 25th, 2023, do you feel this team is in the same place? Is it a small step back, at least on paper right now?
I'd say it is, yeah, because they just don't really have that certainty on the pitching staff. And that's a huge part of winning baseball games, obviously. So just to have Bowden Francis, who I think is really ready to contribute, but he hasn't done it. So we don't know, right? Until he actually goes out there and does that, I would say that he's a question mark. And look, you're missing two of your top relievers, right? So that is not the way you want to go into the season. I think that that contributes to enough uncertainty on the pitching side that, yeah, this team on paper a little worse. Now, it doesn't mean they can't go out there and, you know, win 85 games and stumble to the American League Championship Series, or maybe they win 94 and they win the division. It's all on the table, but it's not a team without some real questions.
Certainly. And you mentioned the pitching side. Hey, maybe they won't have the best starting rotation health in all of baseball this year either. Last year, they had four pitchers throw 30 or more starts, which hadn't happened in baseball for a while. May never happen again, given the current environment we're in. Now, having said that, there is a little bit more maybe major league options in terms of that fifth starter. Last year, you know, the question mark was Yusei Kikuchi. Behind that, it was, well, Mitch White didn't get a full spring. And then after that, it was a whole, like, they ran with a four-man rotation for like a month in the middle of the season because there were no options. This year, we have, you know, Bowden Francis in the mix there. Mitch White still exists. Yariel Rodriguez has been brought in. Alek Manoah theoretically exists as well. We will talk about all of those names. Let's start on the position player side, though, because that's where we have at least some opening day certainty. John Schneider has revealed to us what that opening day roster is going to look like. In addition to all the expected names, the four kind of open competition spots on the bench will go as follows. Daniel Vogelbach has made the team as a non-roster invitee. He'll make $2 million for doing so. They've got a clear 40-man spot as well. Brian Servin will be the backup catcher because Danny Jansen is going to begin the season on the injured list. Servin also not on the 40-man, but there is one open spot, so you only need to create one there. And then Ernie Clement and Davis Schneider have grabbed the last two spots. That necessitated a Santiago Espinal trade. They sent him to Cincinnati, clear the $2.75 million off the books, get a fringy-ish pitching prospect who, you know, probably won't resonate anywhere. But
don't buy his jersey yet.
Yeah.
He can probably hold off.
It's a guy. He exists. Anyway, the other potential player there. I mean, you could have made a case for some of the prospects maybe, but it really came down to these guys, Santiago Espinal and then Nathan Lucas. So first, I guess the decision to put Brian Servin on the roster, you have two players on this team who figure to play bigger roles than this, but have experience at catcher in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Dalton Varsho. Varsho, they've mostly told us his catching days are behind him. He didn't catch at all last year, even though he started 20 some odd games behind the plate in 2022. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, though, you could have made an argument, hey, he's going to be the backup catcher. Danny Jansen's only going to need a week or two. It's not worth the 40-man spot. He's caught like 600 innings at the major league level. It's something he's done before. And you have backfill options in his spot in Ernie Clement, Davis Schneider. It would have let you keep, say, Nathan Lucas on the 26-man roster. What do you make of that decision to go with a third catcher in a more traditional sense than just kind of patch it together for 2 weeks?
Yeah, to me, it makes sense. I actually think that you need to have a defensively capable backup catcher who can just focus on that job and let the hitters focus on hitting and playing defense too. I mean, once you take Dalton Varsho out of left field, you're losing a huge amount of what he brings in that defensive value. And I think the same for IKF and what he brings you at third base. So this is a way where they can really have those guys contributing closer to their max value, and you don't sort of disrupt their rhythm too much. So you get Brian Servin in there. Best case scenario, he probably starts three games for you. Two in the first week, one in the second week, and then you get Jansen back and you're kind of good to go. So it's really minimal. Obviously not ideal from a 40-man standpoint, but I think that's what you have to do. I just don't think you can look at Dalton Varsho as someone who's going to catch at this point. Now, I will say, I do think that there's a case to be made, and Arden and I talked about this on At the Letters last week. To me, I would put Vlad Jr. at third base here and there, but that's about as far as I would go. I would not mess around with the catching position.
And so Vlad at third base, is that a means of, I guess Vogelbach's never going to play even first base, but this is more of a, hey, once Votto's here, he could potentially be at first base, because you would probably still prefer Justin Turner to Vlad over third if they're both in the game, right?
Yeah, you would. So it's more like an extra innings thing, or, you know, if you run into, right, because you could always have Turner, Votto, and then Vladdy at DH, and then no one's out of position.
Or you could go Vladdy at third, Votto at first, Turner at second. You just punt on infield defense all over the place.
You really could. And I think that it's just an option that you could try out, and it's not that hard to do. Spring training is so long, right? Like, we're just getting to the end of it now, 7 weeks after the fact. You have enough time in there to have Vladdy take a few reps at third base. So that's where I would have said, just give it a shot. But it doesn't sound like they're even going to do that. So they're definitely not going to have Dalton Varsho catching.
Yeah, certainly. And Varsho I can get there with, right? The value, the defensive value is so extreme in the outfield. The cost, if he were to get injured, given the replacement level in the outfield, both internally and just in general, is pretty high. So you would maybe, in trying to short-term solve one issue, you could create a bigger issue if Dalton Varsho weren't up for it. The Kiner-Falefa one is, I would have been game to see it. I thought that was not a great contract, guaranteeing 2 years at $7.5 million for a guy who probably should have got, you know, in the $2.5 million range, given the way we saw the rest of the utility infield market play out. But you could at least get me there with, and I understand why they like him. He makes contact. He's better at third base and as a backup shortstop defensively than any of the, I get it. They still overpaid relative to the way we saw the market play out. And I could get there a tiny bit if they were like, oh, well, part of what we're paying for is we could stick him behind catcher in a pinch, and it gives us some roster flexibility.
Yeah, I think that's a fair case. Still don't see that one happening, but
I mean, this kind of tells us it's not going to happen.
100%. This would be when you would do it.
He's the emergency catcher, but not the third catcher.
Yeah, and it might not be like the IKF deal, definitely in the context of the market this offseason, overpay. Like, that was the high watermark for any sort of like utility 1-2 year infielder. And it doesn't mean it's going to be a bad contract, because if he's a 1 or 2 WAR player, you're fine with that. But yeah, there were other guys out there who signed for a lot less, including some that I've talked enough about,
and
I won't get into right now. But yeah, there are other infielders out there who ended up being much better deals.
Okay, we'll circle back on Kiner-Falefa in a second about how the playing time is going to shake out at those positions. But the other kind of 26-man roster decision on the position player side was Vogelbach making the team. And there were two kind of arguments against that. The first was that Nathan Lucas, already on the 40-man, you have more than three outfielders, because a lot of your infielders have experience in the outfield. We only have three natural outfielders there. Lucas has value potentially as a defensive replacement, as a pinch runner. He has, in a small window, been pretty impressive in terms of his plate discipline, his swing decisions, his ability to work good plate appearances, both at the major league level and the AAA level. Now, in his case, he has options. He is also left-handed, which usually helps you in baseball, but in this case, two of the Blue Jays outfielders who he could rotate in for are also left-handed, so you don't get the platoon benefit. The other point against Vogelbach would be that, well, $2 million locks in now. He's made the team, so he's going to make $2 million, and Votto signed a similarly structured deal. So if the plan is, hey, if Vogelbach's not good, you're going to turn to Votto at some point, now you're talking about you're paying $4 million for that kind of 13th position player position. Obviously, that you don't need to pinch pennies too much. You cleared the Santiago Espinal contract. You have a good cushion before the next luxury tax threshold. So even putting the dollar amount aside, Vogelbach over Nathan Lucas, what did you make of that decision?
Yeah, really interesting. I guess, like, starting with the roster side of things and how the pieces fit together, I do think that you have enough outfielders. Even if you only have the three starters, you don't have a traditional backup outfielder. This roster doesn't really demand one because they have two really good center fielders. So you don't have to have that fourth outfielder just flies around and goes and gets it. So that allows them to take a guy like Vogelbach. And that's part of the advantage of having two defensively gifted center fielders in Varsho and Kiermaier, is you can take that slugger on the bench. And if you need a fourth outfielder, Biggio can do it. IKF could do it. Davis Schneider, I think, will see a little bit of time in those situations as well. So I think roster-wise, it makes sense, especially because you can still keep Nathan Lucas in this situation. Whereas if you do it the other way around, okay, you're going to, take Nathan Lucas. He's going to be on the roster. Well, now Daniel Vogelbach is out of the organization and he's been, cut loose. He's been released. Someone else is signing him. And in this situation, what you can do is you start the season with Vogelbach. Yeah, he's, likely, from what we understand, guaranteed that $2 million, assuming he didn't sign advance consent form. So that's $2 million on the books. But A, the Jays are a huge, really big market team. They should be able to do that, and they're doing that. So that's how that should unfold. And then B, even if you get to a point that Joey Votto's healthy in a couple weeks and he's ready to come back, well, then you can DFA Vogelbach and probably find a taker in trade.
Yeah, certainly, especially if he starts off the season hitting like he has the last couple of years. And look, it's hard for a guy like Vogelbach to get a big money. There's a reason he was available on a camp invite with $2 million if he makes the team. And it's not that he can't hit. It's that he can't play a position. So his role is either DH or pinch hitter. And if you're a team like the Blue Jays that has Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Justin Turner, and George Springer, who knows, last year he didn't need many DH days, but he's a year older now. Maybe he does. But Vlad's going to play some DH. Justin Turner will play some DH. Maybe there aren't that many opportunities there. This is not a guy who has struggled to hit in the past. Now, he hasn't hit at the level of we can make him the full-time DH. Like last year, he had a 109 WRC plus, so about 10% better than a league average hitter. It was a little better than that in 2022. Back in 2019, he smacked 30 bombs. So this is a guy who has some power. Do you see the role for him? Like the odds start as a left-handed hitting DH against righties, but for now, at least, this is kind of pinch hitter extraordinaire?
Yeah, I think he could start against a decent chunk of righties to start the year. At that point, you put Justin Turner at third, give IKF a day on the bench, and, you have a little bit more depth to your offense. I think for the most part, he's a pinch hitter. He's a nice, almost a threat, too, on the bench. Like, even his presence will impact the way managers make decisions when they're going up against the Blue Jays, because they know that there's Daniel Vogelbach there and he can take a right-hand reliever deep for a three-run home run. So that is, to me, that's real value. And look, we're talking about the 26th spot on the roster,
which they basically have punted on the last few years. Like they had Nathan Lucas there a ton last year. It was Bradley Zimmer the year before. This front office has shown us with their moves that they're okay with that 13th position player having a very narrow role.
Exactly. And I think that's the way it should be, right? Like if they were to ever implement a 27th roster spot, you'd get even more specific, right? You'd have a pinch runner extraordinaire. So I think this is the way it should be. Just given that you have room for 13 position players, like they're not all going to play, especially on a team that does have some established veterans. I think you're fine to have a really hyper-specific use for Vogelbach.
Yeah, which, you know, we'll see how often that comes up early in the season here, potentially, right? Like, they're going to face a couple teams with a lot of righties. I mean, most teams skew righty heavy, but particularly some of their early season opponents. The other question mark on the position player side now, first of all, Ernie Clement makes it over Santiago Espinal. I know everyone's kind of talked about that decision and that transaction so far. But the question that flows from it then is, okay, Ernie Clement made the roster. David Schneider made the roster as well, despite kind of a shaky spring. Those two are theoretically in competition at second base and third base with Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Kevin Biggio for opportunities. Obviously, Justin Turner is a factor in there as well somewhere. But let's, for now, you know, Vlad, Turner, and Vogelbach is our first base / DH contingent. For the sake of this exercise, how would you see the playing time shaking out between Kiner-Falefa, Biggio, Clement, and Schneider across second and third base, at least to start?
Yeah, I think to start, IKF gets the shot to run with the job at third base.
Primarily because he's so much better defensively than the other options there?
I think it's defense. I think it's, you know, experience. It's probably the fact that he was signed to a $15 million contract versus, you know,
I love to make decisions based on prior decisions that I made, whether they were right or wrong. Look, I'm okay with that justification to start the season. You paid the guy at a level that to play, but that can't be the justification.
Well,
as the season rolls, you know,
100%. And I'm not saying that that is my justification.
Right.
I'm using that as a description of what I think is going to happen.
And also, he's had a nice spring, we should say.
And look, honestly, if I was making that call, I'd roll him out there. You know, for the first 2 weeks of the season, I'd give IKF 10 starts.
Okay.
You know, I think that you want to see what he can do over there. At the same time, Biggio at second base, I think, plays against most righties, if not all righties. Then you can complement Biggio with Schneider, with Clement, on the days that you're facing a left-handed starting pitcher. Get Clement and David Schneider in there as well, off the bench late in games. I think there's real value in both those guys. I think that they have the chance to be, you know, one or two WAR players for this team, which would be really good. Do you see it differently? I mean, that's kind of how I see it at this point.
Yeah, I think I personally would probably have IKF less locked into every day role. I think there's part of that is he does not have, I know he makes contact, but he doesn't really have a track record of being a plus bat. At no point in his career has he had a league average season at the dish. But in addition to that, even if you wanted to spin it more positively, there is, I mean, you can always just bounce him around the diamond as well, but having that versatility of he could come in a number of situations off the bench, play a number of positions, it does give you some flexibility if you're John Schneider. Having said that, Ernie Clement gives you some of that same flexibility. He's not the defender that IKF is at those positions, but you still have some optionality there. And then I guess the other thing we should say is that David Schneider probably sees a couple of his starts in left field against lefties.
Yeah, I think that's a good fit, right? Because you want to give either Varsho or Kiermaier a day off against lefties, then David Schneider's the logical guy. I think that's part of the reason he's on this team. But at the same time, you kind of could do the same thing with Ernie Clement. I mean, mm-hmm. David Schneider, he's not here for his glove, right?
Nope. Like he had my favorite thing, which is a spring training web jam where he makes a great catch that was only possible because of the awful route he took. And look, he's probably improved a little bit in left field. But he's not there. Like you said, he's not there for his glove. There's a reason they went out and addressed third base, and it's because none of their kind of multi-position prospect guys who are knocking on the door can play there capably yet.
Yeah, he's not the answer there, defensively speaking. Now, he can hit. That's great. And so all that to say, if Clement is the one who's, and he had a great spring, right? Like he had the contact skills. He was hitting for more power. Everyone was noticing this. This is why the Jays are rostering him. He was not going to pass through waivers. Mm-hmm. So this is a big league player in the eyes of major league decision makers. And I think that he'll get some chance. And maybe that does come in left field on those days that you want to get one of your lefty hitting outfielders a day on the bench. And really, it's just going to be a meritocracy. Like I say, you know, IKF gets it to start, but like I'm talking 2-3 weeks here, right?
Someone has to get the starts to start.
Exactly. And so they'll adjust. And that really applies, I think, up and down the roster. In most cases, you're going to have to perform. And obviously the longer the track record, the longer the leash you get, to a point, because Joey Votto won't have that long of a leash. But, you know, for George Springer, he will have a long leash. And I get that, and Jose Barrios will, and he should. So that's that. I think it'll unfold that way.
So to round out the position player side, it looks pretty stable right now. When Danny Jansen's back, Brian Servin goes back down to the minors, as was always the plan when you acquired him. You know, the Vogelbach-Votto situation will sort itself out by how they perform. And it sounded today from reading quotes from down in Bradenton that Joey Votto will kind of stay at the complex to do an extended spring training. As good as that one spring training plate appearance was, one plate appearance is probably not enough to get even ready for Buffalo. So he'll do that.
Yeah, well, a great start for Joey Votto, and then the ankle has just kept him out of games for another 8 days. So that's going to delay him it's going to take at this point at least a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Like, he's not close.
And then, yeah, get your tickets for a Buffalo Bisons game. Nice excuse to make the trek down there. It's a fun atmosphere to watch those games anyway, especially once the weather's turned. So, yeah, maybe you could get like a Ricky Tiedemann start with Joey Votto in the lineup.
That's the dream.
Let's go.
It could happen.
That AAA team will also have a handful of prospects who... I did talk to some fans throughout the offseason who, in addition to not liking the dollar amount necessarily on Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, were a little curious of, hey, aren't a bunch of the Blue Jays prospects infield, multi-position infield types and at the AAA level? Would you expect Aurelvis Martinez, Addison Barger, and to a lesser extent, and probably shortstop emergency only Leo Jimenez, those guys are going to start the year in AAA, it seems like. Where are you on those? Like, how confident do you think the team would be if they have a need that one of those guys could contribute right now, even though they're not in the opening day mix?
Yeah, great question. I think for now, they're not. I don't think the team is confident they're ready for the major leagues.
Right.
They would never say that, because why would you ever say that about your own prospects? But I think that, you know, you can get a sense of these things just by how long the spring training battles play out, right? And the Orioles with Jackson Holliday, they kept him and kept him and kept him all the way until the final weekend, and then he's gone. That's a whole other story.
Crazy that he needs just enough seasoning to get past the Super 2 deadline.
Yeah, something tells me he'll be ready right around May 1st. As if he couldn't hit 315 in the majors right now. But
and of that trio, Barger's the only one that had a reasonable spring at the plate anyway. Not that Martinez and Jimenez got a ton of opportunity.
Well, and this is where it's such a difference, right? And, you know, you look at Aurelvis, you look at Barger and Leo Jimenez, I guess you could put on the fringes of that. These guys, like, they are really good prospects. And I would actually put Tiedemann into this too. Like, these are really good prospects. And, like, Aurelvis Martinez, I saw him in a minor league game a week and a half ago, something like that. Incredible power. Just, like, he's not a big guy. Like, he's not a huge imposing figure. But, you know, 5'11", just really quick hands and incredible power. So you really like that. But he still has, you know, all the other things that go into being a major league player, whether it's base running, preparation, defense, swing decisions got better last year, but there's always more work to do on that front. So I just don't see Aurelvis as someone who's kind of knocking down the door, nor do I necessarily see Tiedemann there. I see that these guys have a ton of upside and could and maybe will help this team this year. But if you're Ross Atkins, I don't think you're hoping that that's April 10th. I think you're hoping that's like July 10th.
And Tiedemann had that excellent final spring training start the other day. And yeah, I think it's telling that in addition to the hamstring stuff he dealt with early on that kind of, you know, slowed him down a little bit, there wasn't really, and we'll use this as a pivot to the pitching side of things now, there really wasn't a conversation about who was going to take that fifth starter job with Alek Manoah still on the shelf. It was Bowden Francis. It looked like Bowden Francis from the first side sessions of spring training. I know you were down there a little bit. I think people know I was pretty high on Bowden Francis last year with how that curveball developed, the little uptick in velocity. You like him as SP5 here. And if I'm reading your tone right over the last couple of weeks, maybe not a spot he's going to give up easily.
Yeah, I think he's really impressed. And this goes back to last year where he was really effective in a part-time role. And then in the course of the time I was down there, I covered at least, I want to say, three, maybe four of his starts. And he was really good, just consistently kind of building up. He would run into some adversity and then really recover. He would just throw strikes over the zone, over the plate. And I think that's a great recipe for succeeding in the major leagues. If you have good enough stuff, which he seems to have. So he's not going to necessarily fall behind in counts or get himself into trouble or, you know, run up a pitch count of, you know, 45 pitches through two innings. Like, he does have a lot of the tools and skills that can allow him to go 4 to 5 innings every 5 turns. And that might not sound like much, but man, as you know, Blake, I mean, you talk about what you expect out of a starting pitcher in today's game, 4 or 5 innings is pretty good. And I think he can give you like a 4-2 4.3 ERA in the course of that bulk work.
Yeah, if you can put together 125 innings or something like that over the course of the year, and, you know, as a SP5 and a guy they'll probably, you know, around the All-Star break, or if there's extra couple off days patched together, you know, he'll be the guy that gets skipped or whatever. It's also, it probably helps picturing a guy like Bowden Francis, because you, and we'll get into some of the bullpen decision, but probably going to have a long man or two in that bullpen, just the way options work out. And we'll circle back to Romano and Swanson and their status. But sticking with the rotation, the other question mark, in addition to who takes the SP5 with Manoah already, was, is Kevin Gausman going to be ready? And we're recording this on Monday around 4:30. So we don't know if I think they're going to wait until Tuesday to see how Gausman responds. But he threw 3 innings, 52 pitches, 7 strikeouts, a whole bunch of swing and miss. Obviously, we don't want to scout just the stat line when a guy's coming back from not feeling the best. But performance-wise, Kevin Gausman looked like he's probably ready to go. If he could not make that start the first time through, they decide for whatever reason, hey, we're going to give him one more time. Do you have a lean on who that might be? Would you bullpen it? Would you Yariel Rodriguez it? What are you doing there? I mean, I'm pretty optimistic the reports out of Florida today, though.
Yeah, so if they had to cover that spot, I think it'd be Mitch White starting. Okay. And then you get to Trevor Richards pretty quick, and then you just bullpen it from there.
Like, so instead, it's going to be Gausman with, hey, Mitch White, be ready.
Yeah. Honestly, a pretty surprising outcome, because when I last heard from Kevin Gausman, he was just starting to sort of ramp up again. And at this point, he was saying he wanted to get to 75 pitches in games that did not count multiple times before he got into a major league game. If this current plan stays in place, then he will have got to 75 pitches 0 times. He got to, what did you say? It was 53?
52.
52 pitches today. So, you know, I guess you could say he gets to 65 in his first major league outing, if that's the way it unfolds. So it's probably a 4-inning start. Now, 4 innings of Kevin Gausman is a lot better than 4 innings of fill in the blank, right? Like, that's a really, really good major league starting pitcher. And, you know, watching him, of course, it's really physical, right? As you're saying, it's how he responds physically. But watching him, he's up to 95, 96, and that to me is huge, because
I think he hit 96.9 on one today.
He was consistently in that zone, and that's just massive, because, you know, if he's sitting 93, which would have been understandable after the amount of time that he's missed, all right, you're sitting 93. Well, now you fall behind 2-1, you fall behind 3-1, you got to throw a 93-mile-an-hour fastball down the middle to O'Neill Cruz or to Brian Reynolds, or, you know, obviously it'll be against Tampa or Houston the next time he pitches. That's not what you want, right? So instead, he's throwing 95, 96. He falls behind in the count. No big deal. They're fouling off his 95, 96, and then he can put them away with the slider and the splitter. So, which he was throwing all those pitches for strikes. So I think, looking at the stuff and his comfort level on the mound, I think if you're the Jays, you have to be thrilled with that. And now the only remaining checkbox is essentially how he's feeling physically.
Okay, so we'll play it out. Gausman's going to, and we know how these things, like, if he's not going to be ready, it'll probably only be one start. They've got an off day after the first 2 series, so you could massage it so that he only misses probably 1, maybe 2 starts he'll have to miss, given the IL constraints and things like that. But you know how it would look. You carry an extra reliever. One of them does the bulk day at the start of that. So despite some question marks about the rotation overall, right now we have an idea who the first 5 are going to be, and it's not Alek Manoah, who is still kind of sidelined with shoulder soreness and has been playing catch but not in a game for a little bit. There are also Ricky Tiedemann, who is a top prospect and looked pretty sharp in his last spring start and is going to go down to AAA and continue to work. Yariel Rodriguez, who signed a good money multi-year deal. The plan sounds like it's to get him about 100 innings this year after a year off last year. And, you know, whether you chop that up AAA major league starting relief, you can come at that a bunch of different ways. How do you feel about the team's starting pitching depth in general right now, where Francis is in his 5, Tiedemann, Manoah, Yariel Rodriguez, potentially AAA depth, Mitch White maybe as a guy who could slide in? I feel like your answer is going to be, well, a lot of it depends on where and when Manoah gets back.
Yeah, that's a huge part of it. When I look at this rotation now, it's a lot better just with what we learned today about Kevin Gausman, his timeline, how good his stuff looked. You know,
Kevin Gausman, better than Mitch White. Tune into Jay's Talk Plus.
Honestly, it's such a huge upgrade, though, right? So it's like almost the biggest possible upgrade, really, to go from one of the best pitchers in baseball to like a fringe starting pitcher.
Yeah.
So it's massive. And that really does reshape things for me. You know, as we learn more information, I think beyond that, I'm tempted to say, like, my gut reaction is their pitching depth sucks. That's my honest gut reaction. But then I have to check myself because I look at the other contending teams, and even in the major league level, you look at the Orioles, they got Tyler Wells and Cole Irvin in their rotation. The 101 win, unstoppable Baltimore Orioles. The Yankees, everyone's favorite to win the division, my favorite as well to win the division, Clark Schmidt and Luis Hill.
Clark Schmidt has looked so good.
Well, you got Rodon in there too. You got opening day starter Nestor Cortez. Like, that's it's not amazing top to bottom. The Rays have Tyler Alexander starting. You know, Aaron Civale is their number two. Like, let's see how that, you know. I not to say that those guys won't necessarily all have good seasons, but there are vulnerable spots even on good teams. So I look at the Blue Jays and sometimes I think, you know, for those of us who spend so much time watching this team, we can get really familiar with their flaws and maybe, you know, forget to zoom out a little bit. So I don't want to do that. So I'm not actually going to say their pitching depth sucks. I'm going to say that their pitching depth, upon like a little bit of reflection, is okay, but not good enough to the point that you're really comfortable with it. Yariel, I don't think, is a starting pitching option, but he is a depth option. Same with Tiedemann, frankly. I mean, he's probably four inning, you know, you're not getting more than four innings from Ricky Tiedemann before mid-May. Mm-hmm. So in a major league game, that's for sure. I don't think you're even seeing him in a major league game before mid-May. But, you know, I could be wrong. Things can change all the time. So, you know, Wes Parsons, you don't want to go down that path. You know, who else is there? That's it, right? So it's okay. Where do you land on that one?
No, I'm with you. And I guess the next, and I don't know his opt-out situation, but Paolo Espino would be probably the next guy.
If you're going there, and it's a great story, and Arden wrote it up nicely at sportsnet.ca, but look, if you're going to the 37-year-old who throws 88 miles an hour, things have gone wrong.
Yeah, or you're, you know, hot-shotting Chad Dallas before he's ready or something like that.
I'd be inclined to do that before I go to Espino. You know, again, great story, but you can't. You're not at the major league level.
No. It's the great story for that Buffalo Bison series I'm going to go to check out Joey Votto. Okay, so on the reliever side, we came into camp being fairly certain what the bullpen would look like, but maybe the two highest leverage arms in the bullpen we think are going to start the season on the IL in Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson. You know, the latest today was that there's not really an update, which is, you know, this close to the start of the season, strongly suggests to me they're going to start the season on the IL. First of all, is that your read on it as well?
Yeah.
Okay. So out Romano and Swanson, the first question would be, I guess, who are going to be John Schneider's highest leverage relievers? If you are going based on long-term history, maybe it's Chad Green. If you're going, you know, on who John Schneider's had a lot of time with and trust in, maybe it's a Jimmy Garcia, maybe even a Trevor Richards. How do you see that shake out by committee?
Yeah, I think when John Schneider's asked about this, he will say it's going to be matchups. He'll say we trust all our guys, and he'll probably go to Jimmy Garcia. Would be my guess. I could see, you know, if you had a run of lefties, you probably want Meza loose, but you also might have used Meza against those lefties in the sixth or seventh inning. So maybe you're down to a couple righties and Chad Green would be in the mix, but I think end of the day it would be Jimmy Garcia.
Okay. So if there weren't the injuries to Romano and Swanson, the bullpen decisions would come down to this basically. So Jimmy Garcia is in there because of contract and no options, and because he's in there. Same thing for Chad Green. Trevor Richards, probably the same thing. It's hard to see a scenario where they'd lose Richards, even if he had had a rough spring. And then Tim Meza very, very safely in there. So that's four locked in. Romano and Swanson would have been locked in, which leaves you with two spots. Mitch White, out of options and having had a pretty strong spring, he's probably in there as your long man no matter what is happening health-wise, right?
Yeah, I think Mitch White makes this team. I haven't heard a serious suggestion that he won't.
Right. And he's already been outrighted once. So if you lose him, you lose him. He's, again, had a nice spring. The velocity's way up. Some of the swing and miss he's gotten on his breaking ball as a starter or a long man's been, it's been an encouraging spring, even if the ERA doesn't necessarily pop to you. So that would have left one spot open for Nate Pearson, Yenesis Cabrera, Zach Pop, whoever else you want to throw at that. But now there's three spots open because of the Romano and Swanson IL stint. So the bullpen now is Garcia, Meza, Green, Richards, and White are in there. You've got three spots still if Romano and Swanson start on the IL. Pearson, Cabrera, Pop, I think are most front of mind. You could make a case for Yariel Rodriguez or Wes Parsons as another multi-inning guy out of the pen. And then the only other relievers on the 40-man are Yosur Zulueta, Hagen Danner, and Brandon Little. How do you see those three spots playing out?
Yeah, I think Yenesis Cabrera is on the team.
Yeah.
I think he's in there. Then beyond that, man, like, it is an opportunity for Pearson or for Pop or for Little. I mean, I asked John Schneider about this when I was down there not too long ago, and he identified those three, Pearson, Pop, and Little, as guys who were kind of competing on the edges of that bullpen competition. This was before we knew that Swanson and Romano were in question. So I think that there's opportunity there, but man, it just underscores, like, never have enough pitching, right? Because you're not thrilled about those options. There's not a lot of certainty there. And I don't know, man, like, it's a win now season. If Yariel Rodriguez is healthy and good to go, like, I would go with him, to be honest with you. Like, he's not a kid. He's not 21 years old. He does have professional experience. He's pitching pretty well right now. I just don't see eight better relievers than him.
Yeah, and in his last spring start, didn't miss a ton of bats, swing and miss, but he got a lot of weak contact and was really good at keeping kind of the shadow with his own, right on that borderline. Is it a strike? Is it a ball? And yeah, you'd prefer the swing and miss stuff first, but if you're locating that well second, that's pretty good. And you also, you know, you're going to have to make a decision on Yariel Rodriguez sooner than later anyway because of his contract, and I believe he's only optionable for this year anyway. If you're going to try to get 100 innings out of him, if that's as a multi-inning guy out of the bullpen, and I'm personally of the belief, even though most guys are stretched out a little bit, stretched out pretty good at this point, the value of a guy who can go multiple innings early in the season is higher than it might be, you know, July, August, because, you know, you're probably going to have a quicker hook for guys if they're struggling or if they just, you know, don't have a cold weather, things like that.
And you look at the other options on this team, right? So would you be that shocked? I'm not trying to go too far doomsday right here, but like, would you be that shocked if on May the 5th, we look up and Trevor Richards has a 6.61 and Mitch White has a 7.17? Like, I'm not saying that that's likely. I think they're both better pitchers than that, but
yeah. Like, this is how relief pitching works.
Yeah, exactly. And you want to have someone, you want to have other options. And Yariel Rodriguez has real stuff that can get outs at the major leagues. Like, if you're trying to just set him up to have the absolute best season he can and the smoothest adjustment, then you probably send him to the minors. Like, if the Jays weren't contending this year, you send him to the minors. You let him build up gradually. Take your time. Get comfortable. But that's not the case. This is about winning games right now, and this might be a season where the Jays make or miss the playoffs by a game. So you don't want to lose that game in April that costs you. I say go with the guys who have the liveliest arms and the biggest upside.
There are two other scenarios that we should at least mention as possibilities, although locking down who it would be is particularly difficult. Could always claim someone as cuts are made around, hey, I like this guy who just got cut by the Dodgers better than I like Zach Pop. So we're going to claim him and he's going to take that spot. The other would be someone who's not on the 40 man gets a spot. That's a little harder. It's easy to see over the course of the season. There are a handful of relievers in the system that Connor Cook, I think, could play a part. Mason yeah. Flaherty, if they need a lefty at some point, TJ yeah. Brock's stuff number, like the kind of pitch shape and you know, movement profile on his stuff is really good, even though he doesn't quite have the high minors track record yet. But for right now, I don't think anyone off the 40 man has really made a strong enough case where you'd be like, yeah, because you already need to clear one 40 man spot right now for Vogelbach.
Yep.
So to be like, hey, we're going to lose another guy off the 40 man because there's someone not on it better than the seven options we just said who are on the 40 man. There's no one who's made, as much as I like Connor Cook, no one's quite made that case yet.
No, exactly. And I think you just wait and let it play out because inevitably someone is going to present themselves as a release candidate, or they're going to need 60-day IL time. And the Blue Jays don't really have a candidate for that right now. So, you know, you're not going to artificially put someone on there, but at a certain point, they will have someone on the 60-day IL, and that will open up another spot.
And who knows? You know, it's certainly the reporting we have around it doesn't suggest Manoah is close to that, but he's someone who, you know, really hasn't been a factor. He pitched an inning and a third in spring or something like that.
Yeah, and I think he would rightfully and understandably push back against that.
Right.
And I don't know if they want to go down that whole path again, but
yeah.
But I think you're right. I mean, it's not inconceivable that he might need some time.
Yeah, and who knows? You can always turn around and do that later, but you do need a 40-man spot right now. So let's turn this positive, who's good enough to make the roster, into a negative. So we just laid it out, who is on the 40-man and could potentially be waived to create that spot for Vogelbach and Servin. Again, one spot is already open. On the hitter side, the guys who are not on the roster and who are on the 40-man are Spencer Horwitz and the three infielders we mentioned, Relvis Martinez, Addison Barger, Leo Jimenez. I think Horwitz is the only one of those guys who would be at any risk whatsoever, but you'd probably go a pitcher first.
As far as clearing a spot?
Yeah.
I can't see them clearing Horwitz or any of the other infielders. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it would be...
Oh, and Nathan Lucas.
But. Yeah, and Lucas at this point, I think, is pretty close. I don't think they would clear him. So I think it would be a pitcher. I mean, if I'm Yosfer Zulueta, I'm probably not feeling too confident about, you know, purchasing Toronto real estate.
Yeah, so you've got, you know, the non-roster 40-man guys right now are Yariel Rodriguez, Wes Parsons, Adam Macko. Definitely not losing Rodriguez. Macko's a prospect that they like as a starter. I don't know why they... You know, if you were going to turn around and wave him off the 40-man, you probably just wouldn't have protected him in the first place.
Danner? Do you say Danner?
Yeah. Danner, Zulueta, and Little are the three relievers. Brandon Little, I know they liked him, and they bought him off the Cubs in the offseason or whatever. He's shown very, very little in the majors and in spring. Do you have a sense of which of, like you said, Zulueta specifically? I could see any of Zulueta, Danner, Little, or even Zach Pop, who, you know, maybe not because he's optionable, but he's had a really rough spring after a really rough 2023 as well.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right there. I think if you had to go down that path for any of those guys, you know, they obviously have more information about medicals, about, you know, behind the scenes stuff, but from the outside looking in, any of those four guys would be a reasonable choice.
Okay, so that's what the roster looks like. Let's talk a little just kind of general spring, because I know you were down there, and not everyone is going to make the roster. Not everyone's going to be relevant in 2024, but I remember having a conversation around this time last year, and Arden said, hey, you know what? This Davis Schneider guy might be something. He rose some eyebrows at spring training, whatever. You were down there for a couple weeks. I know all the tweets today were about Damiano Palmigiani because he homered and had, you know, the nice close to last year and things like that. Did anyone pop to you that either that we have talked about and we just didn't get time for, or that you're thinking, hey, later this year, this guy is someone who has my attention?
You know, I'll keep it really simple here. I'll go with a bit of a basic answer and just toss Dalton Varsho out there. And I know you were kind of hinting at minor league players, but
no. Hey,
you know, he looked great. And we all
know
stealing
1,000 bases in spring is going to get my, and I know you're a fantasy player, so it's probably definitely on your radar.
Of course. I mean, those are pretty big developments. And look, if you're the Jays, you have this guy, you have a pretty high degree of confidence that he's going to be about as good as it gets. To be able to play left field defense, but just offensively, he's done it before. It's not like he hasn't done it before. And I think that for him to go out there and put a 110 WRC plus season together is just very much within the realm of possibility. You look at the way he was just making contact with the ball this spring. You know, I don't tend to read too much into BP sessions, but look great in BP, look great, you know, in every setting I saw him. And so I think that you combine that with a little bit more comfort of being in the league and being around this team for the second year. Still a young guy, right? Just 27 years old. So I think there is a lot of reason to be very optimistic. When I look at the players with the highest ceiling on this team, he's right in that conversation.
Well, yeah. I mean, ceiling is when you factor in his level of defense, and maybe he doesn't steal bases at this rate, but he stole 16 last year. And this is a team that was like in the bottom third in baseball and base running aggression at a time when that is becoming more of an advantage for some teams around baseball. Like, he was almost a 5-win player in 2022 with a 302 OBP. Like, the list of guys who have had even 3-win seasons with sub 300 OBPs is next to no one. And he was almost 5 wins right around that threshold. So he does not need to be the on-base machine he's been in spring to have a ton of value. Even if you would say, you know, take the under on the 4.8 wins he had in 2022 or whatever, his path to being a much more impactful player for this team than last year is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, he's a really, really good player. And, you know, he's probably just destined to be undervalued by some, whether it's in the game or whether it's fans. And that's okay. You know, there are enough players on this team that have, you know, a lot more star power, and that's fine. But he's a really good player. So I expect big things from him. I think he's a really important part of this team.
I'd also, and I don't know him that well personally, but I would wonder too if last year being the key piece of a big trade with a big prospect, you get to a new situation, it's a win now situation, you struggle a little early, if the mental reset of the offseason wasn't particularly helpful for a guy like him. I want to take it outside of Toronto now, because I know you're a big fantasy guy. Have you had your draft yet?
Yes, it's done.
Okay. How you feeling, first of all?
I feel great. The offense is stacked. The pitching is just is total question
marks.
So
you're repeating, though.
That's the hope.
Okay. So you are a fantasy guy. I know you're up on all around baseball. I know most people have probably drafted by now. I have both my drafts this week still.
Wow.
So this is a selfish question. But as you went through draft prep, as you kind of kept an eye on the news and the breakouts around spring, any kind of fantasy sleepers around Major League Baseball that you like or have an eye on?
Well, you know, I'm not out here trying to identify sleepers. I'll leave that to the fantasy experts out there. But I just like, you know, how it kind of connects, you know, different storylines around the game and opens eyes to some of the things that are happening. So even just seeing, this is definitely not a sleeper at this point, but, you know, even just seeing that Wyatt Langford is going to make the opening day roster of the Texas Rangers, seeing what he is going to be able to do, knowing the kind of ability that he has against even elite velocity, and having the chance to see that in Major League games is going to be really fun. So that to me is the sort of thing where it's like, you know, of course, massive real baseball implications. The Rangers offense looks really good. Corey Seager's healthy. You got Carter mixed in. It's a great offensive group. But within that, to have this rookie coming up, I think it's super exciting for Texas. And, you know, to toss in a Jays tie-in, this is where maybe it does make sense to draft position players and not go. I think we've talked about this, yeah. Right? You know, it's not, you don't always have to go out there and, you know, draft that high school righty or that, you know, that even that college righty that's,
I mean, look at how much Arjun Namala's popped in, like, a very tiny sample, but we even had some of the, like, more scout-oriented people, Jeff Ponce of Baseball America, posting some videos of his swing today. And yeah, it looks like a guy who, like you see the upside. Now, he's not going to be as quick to the majors as Wyatt Langford, who got drafted like 8 minutes ago.
Yeah.
You know, he finished spring training third in OPS among all players.
Monster. Like, he's ready.
Not even just like the non-major league camp invitee guys. It's like he's one spot ahead of Mookie Betts.
Well, and this is where, and I know Yamamoto had a rough first start, but I think that with all the technology in baseball right now and, you know, some of the advances even in the way that players are scouted with the eye test and with the data that we have a much higher degree of confidence of who's going to be good in the major leagues. Yamamoto hadn't pitched in the majors. He gets a $300 million deal. Wyatt Langford hasn't played a single game in the majors, but clearly the Texas Rangers, objectively and subjectively, when they are gathering information, believe, they are convicted in the belief that he is going to help them defend the World Series title. And I agree with them. I mean, you look at everything you hear about this guy and the swings and the power, like, it's real.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. And, you know, even like to make your point about certainty, you know, giving out 5 years and $30 million to Yariel Rodriguez, who didn't pitch at all last year. You're not even projecting from Korean baseball. You're projecting from like a couple WBC games and what he did in some workouts.
That's right. And some teams maybe thought that was an overpay, but we will see, right?
Yeah.
We will see.
We'll see how that goes. Okay. Who on your team that you drafted are you most excited about?
You know, I've always, growing up in London, I've always had an eye on the Tigers, the Detroit Tigers. And so Spencer Torkelson, Riley Green, these are two guys. That's right. You know, he had a great season last year. Riley Green had a good season. No, I wouldn't say great, but a good season. So those two guys, I think, are really, really interesting to see what they can do. Because if they do continue taking steps forward, or in Torkelson's case, even if he sustains where he was in 2023, you're looking at the core of a really good team in Detroit with Colt Keith and maybe some others coming up on that Tigers roster. So, yeah, that to me is super interesting. Again, of course, from a fantasy standpoint, but also from the real baseball standpoint of like, wow, this could be like a core that's emerging here. And that's tough to do.
So I'll use that to pivot to my last question for you, which is sleeper teams around baseball, because the Tigers are mine. I don't think they're going to win the World Series, but you look at some of these interesting young guys. They did kind of the, you know, a fairly smart move of when you're getting, like, when you're ready to go from being irredeemably bad to respectable. Hey, we're going to trade for Mark Canna. We're going to sign Gio Urshela, and it's not going to break the bank. It's not going to tie up our flexibility, but we're going to have some vets around these guys. We're going to raise the floor a little bit. And then on the rotation side, like, I don't think the world of Jack Flaherty, but you add him and Kenta Maeda to a Tarik Skubal-led rotation. Reese Olson probably going to be in the mix there. This is a team that, especially in a division as weak as the Central, I think is probably a good bet to like make one of the biggest win total jumps in the league.
Oh, for sure. Who do you think is the favorite in the AL Central? Or like, who do you think is the best team? Because I guess the favorite we could look up pretty
maybe
easily.
the Guardians, I guess. Like, I no,
I want to say maybe the Twins.
Yeah, the Twins on inertia, like they won it last year. Like, the White Sox and Royals are not in the conversation at all.
No,
and the Guardians are like, okay, how far can Jose Ramirez take you? Like, I love Jose Ramirez, but I don't think there's, you know, Andrés Giménez is nice. Yeah. We got the Naylor brothers there. But like, yeah, I mean, I guess unless that young rotation just like really, really like the Tristan McKenzie, Tanner Bibee, Logan Allen trio just like is lights out.
Yeah. And you've got, you know, Kwan is a pretty good player. You know, Manzardo is pretty interesting as well for the Guardians. But I don't know. I think the Twins are maybe better, but then they also lost Polanco and Sonny Gray. And, you know, there's a lot of talent that's gone out the door since they beat the Jays in the playoffs. And even then, it's not like they were a powerhouse. So, yeah, I think, to me, I totally agree with you and the Tigers. I think that they're going to be my sleeper team that I sort of pick. And I could see them taking a real meaningful step forward and contending late into the year this season. And, you know, I'll toss in another one, and I want to hear any fantasy sleepers that you have, by the way. So ruminate on
league
that for a second.
League mates might be listening to the draft, I don't want.
Well,
don't
you can text
that.
Me them after that. That's good defensive playing right there. But I will say, just as far as sleepers in Major League Baseball, like, man, the Pirates, they're not horrible, and I don't think they're good. But you get Paul Skeens up there, like, he's probably going to be up. You know, let's say it's May 15th. Gives them 100 innings, 110 innings. You know, there's a chance that Paul Skeens has like a 3-5, right? And then you have Mitch Keller. You have like some major league players on that team. It's a major league baseball team.
It's also a situation where like the AL Central is bad. So you could see one of the teams being good just by way of beating up on division competitions. The projections for the NL Central, there's only a 6-win spread between first and last.
Wow.
So that is like a completely, everyone in this division feels 500-ish, give or take. And yeah, you know, having someone with the upside of an O'Neill Cruz, or like even just the steadiness of Brian Reynolds, right? Like they... And the Pirates, like, weirdly, like, all the things I just said about the Tigers and like them adding vets to steady things around, like they almost went a little too old, like Andrew McCutchen and Michael A. Taylor and Rowdy Tellez. And I know those guys, like Tellez and Taylor aren't like old, but I don't know that there's any upside that like those are pure floor plays. But yeah, I mean, they have an interesting rotation as well. I'm not a big Martin Perez believer, but there are some guys there. Bailey Falter's there now.
O'Neill Cruz too, like, he could have a 7-WAR season.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, that's if he goes out there,
especially if we start calculating WAR just on Statcast outputs instead of actual production.
Yeah.
Then we're golden.
He's a guy who could hit 43 homers and 36 doubles and have like a 995 OPS.
Yeah, it's almost, you almost forget about just how good he is just because he played so little last year, right?
Like, yeah. Exactly. So this is, and he looks great in spring, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, it's worth something. It's worth doing a podcast on that, because that's what we did today. I'm going to let you go. I kept you for almost an hour here, Ben. Thank you so much for doing this. You will be down in Tampa for the opening series, correct?
That, unfortunately, is incorrect.
Oh,
however,
no.
I will be in Houston for the second series of the season.
So Shy and Arden on the first one?
Shy is on the first one.
Okay.
And I will be on the second one.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye. You'll obviously be doing stuff anyway. So
I will be busy. I intend to be.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out. Really looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's good to have Jays Talk Plus back and roaring. And is this the debut episode of the season?
I guess. And like, I don't think we count our Ohtani one, right?
No.
This is the unofficial debut. And then, yeah, as I mentioned off the top, do another one tomorrow. We've got an opening day one, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. on all the Sportsnet spots. There are a couple sprinkled in when the Jays have afternoon weekday games and things like that. A couple days we're going to do Raptor Show and Jay Show. But April 18th, we will be back fully back as an everyday show. So keep an ear out for that. You're obviously already subscribed to the podcast feed. Ben Nicholson-Smith, thanks so much, man.
You got it. My pleasure.